Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All right, everybody, stop playing Zip Zap Zop. We got a show to do.
Yeah, no Zip Zap Zop.
The International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 9. The International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, Local 126 and District 8. The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 150. And, of course, today's Ben Jarofsky Show, hour number two and hour number one, brought to you by our good friends at the Chicago Federation of Labor. Hour number two. Let's go. It is Thursday, January 9th. And live from the Chicago Sun-Times Chicago Reader Studio on Racine Avenue, this is the Ben Jarofsky Show. In this hour of the program, union man Ed Maher is back, and it's another Guide to Getting High with Lisa Solomon of the Chicago Reader. Now your host, the last person you want giving you advice about getting high, Chicago Reader columnist Ben Jarofsky.
Yeah, I talk so much about it. I haven't done it since 1980. Ed Maher in the studio, operating engineers, Local 150, a regular guest on our show. Before we bring Ed on, you got an update for me, D?
Absolutely. I do hear two updates, one local, one national. First up, the local, and it's on all of this damn dirty Illinois corruption. Democratic leaders from the southwest side and nearby suburbs on Tuesday tapped freshman state rep Selena Villanueva to replace former state senator Martin Sandoval, whose resignation took effect New Year's Day, 3 months after federal agents raided his state capitol office. Villanueva, 34 years old, was appointed in July 2018 to an open house seat for the 21st District and ran uncontested for a full term that November. Last spring, she was one of the House sponsors of the legalization of recreational marijuana. So congratulations to state
fast.
Rep Selena Villanueva.
She just became a state rep. Now she's a state senator. There's other people like 10, 15, 20 years for that promotion.
Now, Selena, you're a freshman here, so I'm assuming you're so far on the right track. But please, don't be shady.
Okay, good advice.
It's the last thing we want, all right? And now to the national news. Uh-huh. We have two 2020 presidential candidate updates here. First up, well, according to Ben, he's my favorite candidate, Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Just teasing. Dennis is a Bernie bro all the way.
Mayor Pete, we had our Illinois delegate elections here, and Mayor Pete failed to secure delegates in Illinois.
I'm a little surprised by that. I thought he would be a little more organized than that. It's a very complicated. We're going to have the political know-it-alls, Jacob Capital, explain the whole process tomorrow. I'll be in the studio, executive director of the Cook County Democratic Party. He's going to go through the whole process of what candidates do to get delegates, and if they don't have a slate of delegates, how they get delegates if they win. So it's, you know, like everything else in a primary politics, get a little confusing. But it is a good, it's a sign of organization and support in a state if a Democratic presidential candidate has the connections and contacts to line up a slate of delegates who will support him or her. Usually they're officials, elected officials, or volunteers who are strongly committed to the Democratic Party. Union people, a lot of union people will sign on to various candidates. So generally, Ed and Dennis, it's a sign that a candidate is well connected in a particular state, in Illinois, I'm talking about, if he or she can put a slate together. The fact that Mayor Pete didn't put a slate together suggests to me that he is not, he's not built the contacts in Illinois that you would expect, like a Joe Biden has a full slate.
And it's a little bit surprising just because of the proximity of Illinois to Indiana. You know, you'd figure that a lot of the strength would come from states that are nearby that might be familiar with them, from his time as mayor of South Bend.
Yeah, absolutely. That's another point. So, but he's not afraid to come into Chicago and for fundraisers and so forth. So taking Chicago money is a little different than actually building a network of support. I know Biden has a full slate. I'm pretty sure Bernie has a full slate. Elizabeth Warren has a full slate. We'll get into all this with Jacob tomorrow. I'll have the full list.
And this one's pretty fun here. Another 2020 presidential candidate update. Senator Amy Klobuchar addressed a wide range of issues during her appearance before several hundred students at the college convention 2020 on Tuesday. But perhaps the biggest applause line came when she recited the names of all 50 states in about 30 seconds. I have the video here. We're going to play it.
Okay.
And I think this could be a challenge for some of our guests here in the Ben Jarofsky. Maybe this is our 2020 Ben Jarofsky Show new segment here. So let's listen to Amy Klobuchar recite all 50 states in 30 seconds, and you better believe I'm going to ask Ben to do it too. Here we go.
In Virginia, where with an incredibly diverse slate of candidates, I didn't even know there were people from Virginia. Maybe I'll try every state: Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Arkansas, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, Massachusetts.
I'm no longer a Bernie bro.
Now that's all well and good, but think about all the things you could have been doing instead of standing in front of a mirror with a list of states trying to memorize it. It's got to take hours and hours to figure that out.
Well, I have to tell you, the more confession of my geeky side, when I was a kid, I had a map of the United States on the wall. So this is a long, long time ago when I was a kid. And
yes, it was.
I would...
He's old, guys.
I'm old. But I would stare at that map before I went to bed at Maher, and I memorized, I could tell you, back in like 1965, 66, every state, every capital. I mean, I remember it. Not, it's like, over time, it's lost. So I could not do that in a minute. What about you? Could you just...
Yeah, I used to be really good at geography. We had a National Geographic Geography Bee at my grade school, and I won it a couple times.
Yeah, would you study maps? It's kind of a geeky thing to do.
Can we put 30 seconds on the clock and have you do it?
There used to be a song with the states, but it's been a long time. I've found many other interests. Wait,
there's
in
a comedian. Dennis and I heard the guy. Who is it, the one? He has this hilarious bit about giving nicknames to, abbreviating states. Did I listen to that with you?
I don't think that was me.
Oh, my God. This guy is funny. Like, you know, the people think it's easy to abbreviate a state. Just get it down to two letters. And then, anyway, I was a funny guy. I can't remember who it is. All right, let's get down to serious business, Ed Maher. No more goofing around.
Can you do the alphabet backwards or anything fun
no,
like that?
No, I can't do anything.
Alphabet backwards. Go.
Z. There we go. Z-A. And then a bunch in the middle. No, can't do anything like that. I used to be able to, I think I still could, tell you every single NBA championship team going back to 1960.
Wow.
I know, that's weird. A lot of weird stuff, but
You could name the 2019 Chicago mayoral candidates pretty well last year. You did pretty well
on
that. Yes, I could.
That was tough. There were 14 of them, Ed Maher.
I remember.
Anyway, all right, let's move on to more important things. I got three things I want to talk to you about today.
Sure.
Lisa Solomon coming in. We're going to do a reefer deep dive. But let me just start with a general thing. How the legalization of marijuana in the state of Illinois is affecting your rank and file?
I mean, it's... So far, there have just been a lot of questions, and it has created a lot of uncertainty within the industry. All the unions maintain drug testing programs. You know, we're all committed to a drug-free workforce, a safe workforce, because in construction, you know, the folks who are intoxicated who create an accident, it's very common that they're not the one that gets hurt. It's somebody else who was working next to them. So safety is something that we're all extremely committed to, and drug testing is an important part of that. Now, one of the laws that was passed after the legalization of recreational marijuana was the Illinois Privacy in the Workplace Act, and that had a part that prohibited any employer from denying employment to someone for use of a lawful substance outside of work premises, things like that. So with that, it became sort of more and more challenging for employers to administer a test that included cannabis and not hire someone because they failed the cannabis portion, because the onus would then be on them to prove that to prove that the person was intoxicated when they came in, something like that. So the pre-hire drug testing in the construction industry for cannabis is a lot of contractors, a lot of contractor groups are no longer going to be doing that. They're just removing that from the panel. So the one of the problems with testing is that the technology for intoxication, I was just talking to Lisa about it, and it sounds like she knows quite a bit more about this than I do, and I'm excited to hear more about it, but it's a little bit more challenging to find out, whereas you can do a test for alcohol and find out if somebody is under the influence right now. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to do something like that with marijuana as well if you are in a position where you want to say that somebody's intoxicated, because I think you're going to see more and more and more people using recreational marijuana or things like CBD products that also have THC, or, you know, aren't supposed to have THC but still have some THC in them. But so it's created a lot of uncertainty. But in the construction industry, especially in the operation of heavy equipment, I mean, we don't want intoxicated workers at the controls of any kind of heavy equipment at all. And so we are committed to drug testing and to ensuring that every one of our members is drug free. And, you know, those who have problems, and across society, there are, you know, folks who need help, and we provide, you know, treatment options and things like that for our membership. But the idea that that a lot of folks won't be tested for this stuff across the construction industry, and I think in a lot of other industries, you know, it's something that requires a lot of thought. It's challenging. Just the things that marijuana is different because it's a fat soluble drug, so it can be in your body even while you're not intoxicated, and that just makes things so much more difficult when trying to hammer this peg into the hole that's, you know, with all the other drugs that you typically find in a drug panel. Mm-hmm. And now that it's legal, it's just, I think it's going to be the Wild West for a little while until maybe some more advanced testing technology comes out. Because at the end of the day, marijuana is legal just as alcohol is. And it can also intoxicate people and put them in a position where they're not safe to do certain things like operate heavy equipment. So, you know, it's we're going to have to find a balance, and hopefully the testing technology moves along rapidly, because that would make life a lot easier. And hopefully if something like that happened, they could bring the federal law in line with state laws, and I don't know, just make things easier for everyone, because things like CDLs and crane certifications and apprenticeships are all governed by federal laws.
What do you mean by CDL?
A commercial driver's license. Mm-hmm. So like a truck driver, they have to take physicals that are approved by the United States Department of Transportation. So all the definitions and all the requirements that go along with that are governed by the United States Department of Transportation, which is and the associated federal laws. So if you have a CDL, you can't smoke marijuana. It's zero tolerance for marijuana. It's a banned substance. It's an illegal substance. Same thing with nationally accredited crane licenses. Same things with apprenticeships that are governed by the United States Department of Labor and associated federal laws. So there's a lot of there are a lot of really murky things that are created by the, you know, the disconnect in state laws versus federal laws, as well as the inability to really accurately test for intoxication. Though it sounds like I might be a little bit off on that. I'm excited to hear more about it.
Lisa has to say that
she's writing stuff down. I bet it's going to be good.
She's our reefer expert. Every show has to have one.
Do you have a business card that says that? Because you really should.
Reefer expert. Did you have any concern when marijuana became legal, Ed, that because of the contradiction between federal law and state law, which is legal, that people who shouldn't be smoking marijuana would be, you know, enticed into doing it? Well, it's legal on the state level, not thinking that, of course, that it's still illegal on federal level, not thinking that it could impinge on their ability to get a commercial driver's license or operate heavy equipment or be a pilot or et cetera and so forth. Did you have concern about that going into this?
Yeah, I mean, it's confusing. And the emergence of CBD products, excuse me, has made it even a little bit more challenging, because over the course of the past year, we've had a lot of members, CBD, I mean, I've never used a CBD supplement, but I hear that it's basically good for what ails you. You know, I've heard from somebody that CBD is good for just about anything that there is. And they market all these no THC or THC free CBD products, and you can buy them at the gas station, you know, but people are taking these, and there's a, you know, a small amount of THC in there because the FDA doesn't regulate any of this stuff because it's not federally legal. And so people are failing drug tests for THC and saying, oh, this is, it said it was THC free. That's, we've had more than a few of those things happen. So it's communicating a really, really confusing situation to our members. Like, yeah, it's legal, or yeah, it's going to be legal, and yeah, this says no THC, but it's just because it says it on the label that the guy at the gas station told you so doesn't mean it's legit. So your job is dependent on you being sober at work. So do that, be that. You know, at the end of the day, that's what we've had to tell our members is you can still be fired. You know, you can still be disciplined for being intoxicated by a substance that's legal. So don't anybody run out there and think that you can just, you know, be smoking a doob in the cab of a piece of equipment because you can't. And we don't want that. Yeah. I mean, we represent these workers, but we want the safety of a construction site is paramount to everything else.
Yeah. I have many friends of the police officer persuasion, and they're in the same position. You know, I'm like, guys, you can't smoke this stuff. I mean, because they do regular drug testing, police officers, firefighters as well. And then it gets into the issues of when you can drink for the test. I got friends like who are oh my goodness, I could tell you so many stories, Ed, where like, they call me for advice, which is so funny because I really don't know any. They should call Lisa Solomon. Ben, I smoked a joint yesterday. It's in my system. What do I? How do I know? Yeah. You know.
About that.
I eat a lot of poppy seeds.
Yeah. Eat poppy seeds. Anyway, I have no idea. Well, that's Lisa Solomon. This is something we'll watch. I'll bet you there's going to be some litigation that comes out of this. Some lawsuits are going to come out of this. I do believe this will be one offshoot. I'm a big proponent of legalizing. I was calling it for years, but I'm with you 100%. There's some professions where I don't want the people high. I don't want them drunk. I don't want them high on cocaine or anything. Right. You know, I want them sober. Operating heavy, it's driving. Did you see the Denzel Washington movie where he's the pilot? He's taking cocaine.
Flight.
Was that what it was called? Flight?
I think it was called Flight.
It was a hell of a great movie. Where he turned the plane
that's a really
down.
Bad example because he was drunk and on cocaine and he still landed that plane.
He turned it upside down and landed it.
I think you're sending the kids the wrong message.
He's Denzel. He can do anything, Edmar.
He really can.
I'm like, you know, I don't want my pilot high.
No.
Anyways, we'll be watching this one. All right. You were talking about some pension issues.
Yeah.
That were facing union folks in the coming year. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot going on in Washington, of course. But there's something that's kind of slipped through during the holidays. A couple of Senate Republicans, Lamar Alexander and Chuck Grassley from Tennessee and Iowa, respectively, have put together a plan for pension reform. And it's kind of flying under the radar for a lot of people, but it's essentially meant to eradicate multi-employer pension plans in the United States. Currently, there are about 10 million workers who are part of a multi-employer pension plan, and there are about 13% of those where those plans are, you know, going broke, are going to run out of money, including one gigantic Teamsters fund, the Teamsters Central States Fund. And so there are about 1.3 million workers that are at risk of, you know, having to take lower pension payments when they retire as kind of like a settlement thing through the trust fund, which is essentially like the FDIC of pensions, like a federal insurance thing. So the Republicans in the Senate have wrapped their arms around this as a reason to rescue pensions in the name of saving, you know, this 13% of workers. But their plan to do so is to put regulations and actuarial limitations on the remaining 87% of all the plans that would put every healthy pension plan into a critical zone. So it doesn't save anyone, but it kills all the survivors. You know, it would limit what pension plans can assume their rate of return to be, you know, putting it down to the corporate bond rate, which is like 4% when actual performance is usually, you know, closer to 7 or 8. 6 or 8% on investments, and just kind of pull a few sneaky little levers, create a tax to take out of retirees' pensions, like up to 10% that they just take out and mail to the government to put into a trust fund to rescue, you know, other pension funds. So penalizing healthy pension funds to not even bail out, but kind of pay a parachute to participants of unhealthy ones. So it's something that's it's gathering a little bit more attention in Washington and among the union movement, but it's something where it will put every multi-employer pension participant into a decline, where at some point their pension fund is going to go broke. It puts restrictions on union construction or contractors, like the contractors who pay into these pension funds, puts them in a spot where they can't get out of these pension funds, and the withdrawal liabilities, the amounts of that they'll have to pay to get out, are higher than ever. So it's basically troubled pension funds fail, healthy pension funds fail, pension signatory contractors fail, and the survivors are all basically killed. So the Republican Party's been pushing this really hard. We've been working with our members to reach out to their Congress folks, their senators, and it's been something we've been working really hard on for about the last month. It's called the Multi-Employer Pension Recapitalization and Reform Plan. It's really just an attack.
What do they mean by multi-employer?
So a multi-employer plan, for example, if you have an operating engineer, a crane operator might work for three or four different contractors over the course of a year, or more than that. I mean, we have members who get, you know, a dozen W-2s at the end of January for all the contractors. You know, they get called out for a 5-day job here, a 2-month job there. But a pension fund, all their money that goes into their retirement goes into one place. It might be the contributions might come from multiple employers, which is the multi-employer angle of this. The single employer version would be like United or American. And there used to be what's happening here is basically the same thing that was done. These regulation changes were done to the single employer plan, I think about 15 or maybe 20 years ago. And it eradicated single employer pension plans. I mean, they did this and now they're saying we can do this. We did it on the single employer side. They wiped out the single employer pension side. That and, venture capital and things like that moving in and taking over companies and putting them into bankruptcy and then bringing them out without unions and, just not paying the pensions and things like that. But it's bad news. Multi-employer pension recapitalization and reform plan. Sounds really cute, but it's horrible. If you're in a union, if you have a pension, look it up. Call your senators. Tell them it's a load of bull and not to fall for it.
All right. Now, our usual pension guru comes once a month, Jeff Johnson. We take a deep dive on pensions. We're usually doing public pensions, and it's really geeky territory.
Oh, yeah.
But generally, a resounding theme every time we have the discussion, Ed, is that there's not a lot of support for employees' pension rights because, relatively speaking, so few people have pensions. I personally believe, I'm a little lefty, everyone should have a pension, and that the model that Jeff Johnson's members have, we should all get, because I got bad news for you folks. You're going to get old. The alternative is even worse to getting old. So you need to have some kind of money when you retire, and to be totally dependent on just like investments in the stock market, et cetera, at a 401, there could be a crash coming right around the corner. There's no real protection for that.
There certainly is a lot of criticism of pensions, and there is a difference between public pensions and private pensions where one is paid through taxes and one is not paid through taxes. And the multi-employer pension plans are typically private pension plans. The plan that we participate in is a private plan. I will say that the man who basically created the 401k, he has been interviewed several times in like Forbes and Fortune magazine, things like that over the past couple of years. And he always says the 401k was never meant to be a standalone approach to retirement savings. It was supposed to work with a healthy Social Security plan, and then pensions, which were common at that time, and then other retirement savings. But he comes out now and denounces the kind of the prevalence of 401ks as the sole vehicle for retirement savings because it's just not enough. I think there are between 40 and 50% of full-time workers in the United States right now that don't have anything saved for retirement.
Wow.
The average amount of retirement savings, I wish I could remember the number off the top of my head, but you know, I think that there are 80% of full-time American workers that have $60,000 or less saved for retirement. You know, it's a problem. And what do you hear? You know, every time that we want to go out and pour a bunch of money into something or give massive business tax credits, the solution to make the books balance is cut back on Social Security and Medicare.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? There was, then it's usually, I think Social Security is actually untouchable. I say that in a touch wood when I say that, but I remember George Bush briefly talked about doing it in 2004, backed off immediately.
Right.
Donald Trump hasn't talked about it.
Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan. I mean, that was Paul Ryan's dream back in the day. And when the big corporate tax thing, the tax cut came, I mean, there were minimal help, like benefit to workers, and a lot of people actually made less money or saw less money and paid more in taxes. But when that happened, it was kind of like, okay, we're cutting out like 20% of our federal revenue by doing this. So just wait for it. Within the next couple of months, they're going to say, well, we can't afford these entitlement programs. And that's what happened. I think it was like 6 weeks later that Mitch McConnell came out and said, we're going to have to reform these plans. Can't afford them. It's like, you know why we can't afford them? Because Amazon's not paying taxes.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, that's just one example. But yeah, I mean, these things, people have to be able to retire, because if people retire or can't work anymore and they don't have any money, it's not like you can send them out to pasture. Something has to happen. There's got to be a social safety net for people like that. So, you know, it's going to require federal resources. And I think we saw the abuse of that under Governor Rauner here with folks who have developmental disabilities. He slashed and burned the budget for all those things so that there weren't day programs for these people. There weren't job programs, training programs, things to fund, you know, special care. And it's not like these people went away. They fell into need in other parts. I mean, the need is there. And the government exists to help people who are a little bit down on their luck or who need more resources than they can bring to bear. And it's going to happen. You got to take care of them here, or you're going to be taking care of them somewhere else. I mean, look at mental health compared to the prison population.
I would caution anybody when the word reform is used in connection with anything, particularly the state of Illinois, look out, because it means it's taking it from people who really need it and giving it to someone else. Generally, that's what reform is. So they go, let's do pension reform.
Yeah.
So they're going to take some geezer who's living on a pension, make them pay more in health benefits or what have you.
And I'm not making a storm in a teacup here. This is the retirement of 10 million people we're talking about, and they're looking to wipe it out.
Are there any champions standing up on the behalf of the pensioners? You mentioned two Republican senators, Lamar Alexander, Chuck Grassley, who are proponents of the bill. Mm-hmm. Is there anybody fighting it?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of different pension reform plans that are kind of floating around in the Senate right now, and a lot of people on the Democratic side are pushing for other plans. There was a small plan that dealt with the mine workers' pension fund, and then there's something called the Butch Lewis Act that would help some of these funds through federal loans and some other things like that. But it's funny because all of you're wiping out 87% of the healthy funds to help 13% that are unhealthy, and it basically doubles the payout that the people in that unhealthy population would get. And so that allows the people that are behind all this to say, we got to help these people, you know, and that's what they're doing. But they're trying to help the Teamsters. The Teamsters have come out against this plan. Everybody's fighting it. It's, you know, it's a knife in the heart of retirement, but it also wipes out union employers, and it would weaken unions. And that's what it is. That's what it's supposed to be. So,
all right, we'll be following this one as the year unfolds. Before I let you go and bring our reefer expert on, I have to ask you, what are you sort of? Are you optimistic as you head into the year for the unions? We have a presidential race. We have Democratic primaries. Still has to be figure out who the Democratic candidate. Are you coming into this year optimistic, or are you pessimistic? How are you feeling about things?
You know, it's hard to go into a year pessimistic. I don't find myself really approaching too many things pessimistic. I think we've got a lot of challenges ahead. Local 150, the union that I'm a member of, we have a breakdown of about 50% Republican members, 50% Democratic members. And I think right now the undecided portion of that membership is very small. I think right now people know which way they're going. And this is going to be a very, very divisive election nationally. And we've got to deal with that within our own membership as well. You know, through providing information on issues that are pertinent to us. You know, we're not in the business as a union of telling our members how to vote on social issues, be it abortion, gay marriage, you know, religious rights, whatever. That's not what they pay us to do. They pay us to be watchdogs on workers' rights issues and infrastructure and things like that. So we take that interest closest to heart when we're doing political endorsements. And you know, it veers to one side of the political aisle right now more than the other. And we'll have a lot of members that are not really comfortable with that. And it's going to be a challenge. We, you know, just figuring out how to communicate facts to members, because, you know, the president has done a hell of a job of going out and saying, these people are going to tell you I'm bad, but I'm not. I'm out there for you. And then when somebody's like, he's lying, he's hurting you, they say, hey, that's what he told us you were going to say.
Oh,
you
know? Yeah.
And, crazy like a fox. You know what I mean? I can't understand it.
Yeah, crazy like a fox. Well, literally, you just got finished talking about how there's a Republican bill that would hurt pensioners.
This is a great example for people to see. This is what's happening. These things don't originate on one side. They only come from one party. So
yeah.
Take for it what you will.
I'll throw this out there. I don't know if I had this conversation with you. I think I may have had it with you. I can't remember. I've had so many conversations that we were talking about the General Motors strike, UAW, and Bernie Sanders went and marched with the strikers. Donald Trump did not. It was a Tribune reporter.
He doesn't like to walk. He would just ride along in his golf cart.
Waddle along, Donald John Trump. Anyway, and yet there were some workers on strike who said they supported Trump.
Yeah.
And so when the reporter asked them, well, what about Bernie Sanders? He walked with you. And he goes, well, that's just what politicians do.
Right.
And I'm like, what can you do, Ed Maher? Dude walked with you.
Yeah. The problem is you're trying to make sense of it. And you can't, you know.
I mean, the guy has a point. It was like a political act. Obviously, Bernie was looking to pick up support. So, yeah, it was a political act. But he was there, you know?
You know, he's turned America into teams. There's like two teams. And people, I think, instinctively like to be a part of a team. So it's us against them, except them is the other half of America.
Well, when you talk to, let's say, the them part of your union that is Democrat, do you have a sense of which Democratic candidate is doing the best, or is it all over the map?
I think we're still kind of waiting to see, and we've got a lot of work to do with our members to take the temperature of our members. I know that there are some that are very unpopular within our membership. I'm not going to get into that just yet, but I think that we'll probably figure something out here. I don't know. Pretty soon. We're working with our international. We're doing a lot of polling, and we're trying to make the most educated decision that best reflects our members' values and what we've got to protect and things like that. But to be determined. I'll talk to you. Maybe next time I come back, I'll have some more info. Sorry for that total lame answer on that one. Well, I try not to do that to you.
It was a little of a duck. It wasn't even a duck and a dodge.
It was a tease.
It was a tease. It's called a tease. Ed
more
Maher.
To come.
More to come.
A tease.
Tease. A duck and a dodge is different.
That's me, Ben.
It's a tease. Ed Maher, the tease.
It's your mind out of the gutter.
My mind is out of the gutter. we have much reefer discussion ahead of us. Lisa Solomon here, and she's brought a mystery guest, Ed Maher, mystery guest on the Ben Jarofsky Show.
Is his name Mary Jane?
Ed Maher, we get zanies next week.
Thank you.
Good.
Thank you very much.
So we'll let Ed Maher leave the building. We'll bring Lisa Solomon, a mystery guest, on when we return.
The Ben Jarofsky Show is supported by Northwestern University's part-time master's program in literature and liberal studies. Students learn from dynamic and diverse faculty as they build advanced skills for critical analysis, writing, and research. Evening classes are held on Northwestern's Evanston and Chicago campuses. The spring quarter application deadline is January 15th. Learn more at sps.northwestern.edu/masters.
Hey, everybody, what you're about to hear are the piano stylings of Jeff Manuel. Man, listen. Listen to Jeff go. Jeff Manuel has been playing piano around Chicago for years. He's played for conventions, for celebrities, played in basement bars with blues bands. He's played at prestigious social clubs, fine restaurants, and in the intimacy of private homes. Book Jeff Manuel at jeffemanuelpianist.com. Don't worry, I'll spell his name at the end of this commercial. You know what Chicago Magazine said? They said that Jeff Manuel is, quote, as comfortable with Chopin as he is with Cole Porter. He's excellent, and his performance is joyous. He offers an elegant stream of compositions and interpretations that entertains the mind but won't hurt the ears. To hear more of Jeff Manuel's work and to book Jeff for your next event, go to jeffmanuelpianist.com. I'm going to spell it out for you, people. J-E-F-F. M as in Mary, A, N as in Nancy, U, E, L, P, I, A, N, I, S, T.com. Take it away, Jeff Manuel.
Hey, commercial break's over. Welcome back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Lisa Solomon is in the studio. She is our resident reefer expert. I just saw you yesterday at the reader retreat.
Oh, that was great. A lot of fun. Great team we have.
Yeah, and we did the zip, zap, zop thing, man. Zip, zap, zap, zip, zip, zip. And you still can't.
Still haven't heard an explanation on what this is.
All right, Lisa, could you help us out here? So it's a game. It's a theater game. Wait, mystery guest, you're not allowed to talk until you've been officially. Mystery guest is like, I know what it is. But it's a game, right? Miles Porter knows how to play this game. So everybody gets in a circle, and the first person goes, zip. Wait, you go, zip. Wait, don't you? You go, zip. And then the other person zap. Goes, zap. Yeah, and then I go, zap. And then, wait, I shouldn't have done it to the mystery guest. I go to you. And now you have to do zip.
Zip.
Yeah, but you got to point at someone.
Oh, zip.
Zap.
Well, this anyway, is great podcasting content here.
Anyway, man, we did that at the reader. It took a while for me to get. I'm a little slower. Everybody knows that. And by then, I was out of the game.
Yeah, you were out pretty quickly.
Oh, man, I was out so fast. Ben, leave.
I was a newbie. I was in there for the final eight, I think.
You were very intense. I saw a side of Lisa Salmon I did not realize existed. Lisa Salmon, like, threw an elbow, said something about her mother.
Oh, wow.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Dang,
laser focus. That's what it's all about.
Anyway, before we bring on a mystery guest, you got an update for me, D?
I think you created a monster here, Ben. People on the YouTube live stream chat, you guys are all awesome. How's it going? Yeah, they keep calling me Dr. Doobie. So I guess we got Stephen, Dr. Doobie in the mix, coming at you with another fat rip of dank local news. Stephen, come on, you know, Dragon Slayer. When is the Benny J Show going to get some merch, like some nice prescriptions of White Lightning Reefer from Dr. Doobie? Guys, it's not my name. I'm Dennis.
Back home in Alton, they call him Dr. Doobie.
We always love it when you join the live stream chat. If you're on the download, you should join us and listen live sometime and weigh in on the YouTube live stream chat. Our good friend Jeff Biss has joined us, going back and forth with our uber left wing listeners. Good times. Yeah. Join the Ben Jarofsky Show live stream chat. I'm not Dr. Doobie.
I love my uber left wing listeners. All right, Lisa Solomon, please introduce our mystery guest.
All right. Sitting next to me here is Amy Nathan, co-founder of Gromentum Lab. They are an incubator for people from communities affected mostly by the war on drugs to help them get into the business. I'll let her tell you more about it because she can speak about it so much better than I can. Before we move on to the social equity component, though, I want a couple minutes to talk about why legal weed. If you're going to use cannabis, there are reasons to get it from a licensed dispensary.
As opposed to getting it from Nickelback Bernie.
I don't know Nickelback Bernie. Maybe he's growing clean product.
Yeah.
But that's one of the big issues. Mm-hmm. So when you're buying cannabis from a dispensary, you know it has been tested by a third-party lab. It's being tested for all types of contaminants. Fungus, mold, pesticides. You don't want to be smoking that stuff because some stuff that you can touch becomes highly toxic when you breathe it in, when you heat it and ingest it. So you don't want to do that. So that leads me into a possible reason that there is this huge flower shortage. Because I got to tell you, the shortage of flower, which is the raw bud, the dried bud that you could buy and smoke, you can roll it, they sell pre-rolls, or you can put it in your bong or your one hit or whatever it is, your vape, certain vapes that you can vape bud from. There's a lot of talk that there were a couple of huge crops that tested dirty, meaning they had too much pesticide, too much mold, or something else in it. This is not confirmed directly, but a lot of people say, yeah, my friend's at this company, and that's true. So what happened was they couldn't sell it as flower. They couldn't turn it into pre-rolls. They couldn't sell it by the eighth. They needed to process it and use this really high-tech equipment that pulls out all those contaminants. It is serious high-tech equipment used in the cannabis industry. So that's why you could still get vape cartridges and edibles, because they could make the oils and sell it that way. But it could kill you. And there's also talk that that's part of the vape issue. It wasn't just the vitamin E, but there were some contaminants on products.
All right. Now, let me just play devil's advocate for a moment. All right. Now, I just want to start by saying I am not on any way advocating that people go back to nickel bag Bernie and buy it illegal. I'm not advocating that, listeners. Okay. N-O-T. Not. But I'm just going to play devil's advocate with you. When I hear you talk about how dangerous illegal weed is because it's not...
Some of it.
Okay. I'm just reminded what people have been saying forever. People have been smoking illegal weed since forever,
right,
including some people that I know. And so why should they believe the industry when the industry says illegal weed is bad for you? Because it's not regulated, when in fact, up until, a week ago, they were smoking illegal weed.
Right. So not all of it's bad for you. You've got people that I'm sure are doing hydroponic grows with organic fertilizer, and it's a good, clean product.
Mm-hmm.
It's not tested, so if you're using it as medicine and you need a certain amount of THC or CBD or other components, you're not sure from crop to crop what it is. When you're buying it at a dispensary, it's labeled. So if you're buying it from one of these budding entrepreneurs that I'm hearing are hanging out around dispensaries selling their flower to people who can't get it in the dispensary, ask a lot of questions. You know, you've got a lot of listeners that probably only buy organic produce,
mm-hmm.
but yet they're not asking their local weed person they're buying it from, what pesticides are you using? So you might think you're clean and healthy. Ask questions. Be an informed consumer.
All right.
You know, you got to know what you're getting.
Yeah, fair enough. Although the notion of an informed consumer when dealing with an illegal product is kind of far-fetched. Amy, it's kind of like a contradiction in terms, is it not?
It is. It is. We've all been living in a whole different world. It's a new day. We're seeing with 2020.
Yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah. So you're here. Are you taking notes, Dennis?
I took them.
All right. You took notes. Okay. I was asking some of these questions on behalf of a few people close to me.
But would you actually be buying bootlegged gin from your neighbor's bathtub today?
Right. Moonshine's a perfect example and analogy.
You wouldn't.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, well, wait a minute here. What's going on here? I don't know that I really want to be drinking from my neighbor's bathtub.
I believe there's a role for a government to play in ensuring that the products we're consuming are healthy for us. And in general, I would have more trust in buying a product that has been inspected by someone who knows about it, as opposed to just buying it from Billy Bob on the street. So that's just how I go about it in general. So yeah, it's one of the, I mean, there were so many reasons, and this gets in the heart of what you're gonna talk about. There were so many, at least this heard me on this subject, something like that. There were so many reasons why I wanted marijuana legalized. I could list a...
cannabis.
Oh man, I was gonna call it reefer, I was trying to dress it up. What's the difference between marijuana and cannabis?
I'm gonna let Amy take that one.
Well, it's the same product, but marijuana has with it all sorts of stereotypes, stigma, and actually racist issues that have to do with keeping the plant away from the thought of overturning prohibition of it.
So in other words, if I say cannabis, we're one step removed from the drug wars?
Oh, yeah. We're turning the tide completely on the drug wars.
Right. I'm really struggling with the cannabis thing. I'll get to it, you know.
It's just the name of the plant.
No, I know. But it's just sort of like cannabis, man. All right. But for the sake of this discussion, we'll call it cannabis.
How about this? Cantrepreneurs. Instead of entrepreneurs,
entrepreneurs. Yeah.
Oh, okay,
man.
I like that.
Yeah. All right.
That's good.
The T-shirt you can get.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So when I was talking about the reasons that I wanted cannabis legalized, reefer legalized, is that number one on the list was it was so unfairly the laws were so unfairly enforced. That was my number one reason, and I just felt it was so hypocritical mm-hmm. of our country to essentially have cannabis reefer legal for white people but illegal for black people, which is basically what it was for the last 50 years or not even though because but definitely the
50
last
years 50 yeah. years for sure, but even before that as well. 50 right. years that we really have good data on it, but it was basically 4-1. People would be minority, black, brown people would get arrested relative to white people mm-hmm. for the exact same thing, in this area 7-1.
And so how is the law legalizing going to change that?
Oh, well, for starters, there's a very big element of it that is about social justice, and that is specifically for something that would have been considered a crime before January 1st. Today, that's considered legal. So all the people who offended that crime at that point, those records are in process of being expunged. Many of them have already been expunged. Some people have done their time, and they're still living with a cloud over their head where they can't get access to jobs, they can't get access to loans, they can't get access to housing. The list goes on. It impacts the rest of their life. So that is what's being really, that's been overturned, that's been changed. So that's part one of the component. The second thing that the statute does is it actually creates a favorability towards people from those communities or that were impacted in that way towards applying for licenses and getting access to becoming owners in this space. And that's what we're here to really help with.
And there's another part to that. So even if someone's record is expunged, if they've done time, they've got this gap in their work history, and people are asking, where were you? So we need to remove that stigma too, because someone of color who went to jail for having one joint should not, you know, have their life ruined when you've got white kids in the suburbs getting caught with a lot more than that, and they get a little slap on the wrist. It's so inequitable.
Mm. Or we're never slapped on the wrist. They were just never, they're just allowed to do it. So, yeah.
Some spent thousands and thousands of dollars on attorneys because they had that.
Yeah.
That option.
Yeah, I could tell you some stories about Iowa, but whatever, we'll leave that alone. So 7-1 was... Oh, no, here's the question I had for you. So let's say they expunge the record, but it doesn't deal with what you were just getting at. When the employer calls, calls in Benny and says, I'm looking at your record, and it seems as though you just were non-existent for years 2010 to 2011. Where were you, Benny?
It's a gap. Gap in employment. I've been a manager in large-scale corporations before, and that's the first thing I'm looking at when I look at somebody's resume is where have they been, what they've been doing. A lot of times you're talking to someone who's female, you're like, oh, they were probably taking care of their kids. But still, you don't really know, and so you have to ask questions and ask what skill sets they learned during those gap years.
And so what protection is there for a prospective employee who doesn't reveal that he or she was in jail?
Well, there's no protection, but with this law, there's a favorability. There are all sorts of workforce development programs right now in the works, because these dispensaries and all the other organizations, all the other companies in this entire sector. So there are many different verticals. There are grows, there are infusers, there are
security companies.
There's security, there are ancillary companies like security companies and all these different goods and services that have to supply these different plant-touching organizations. There's an entire industry that's burgeoning here right now. And so there's a lot of favorability to people who happen to know the product and who have an experience. And those items are not going to be looked at in the same scrutinized way that they were be if you were going to go into banking or healthcare or something else.
No, I agree. That's a great point. But people wanting to get back into other industries, there is a lot of work to be done to remove those stigmas, to normalize it, because you've got their managers often, you know, being people who've smoked for years. They just didn't get caught.
Right.
All right. Now, let's break some of these down. Grow and Infusers. Talk about those two.
So there are five different verticals. One is really sort of a catch-all for everyone who supports these different verticals. But the verticals are sort of sectors within the industry that are required in an entire value chain or an ecosystem, let's say. So somebody's got to grow the stuff. Illinois is a very unique situation because of this law and the way that intrastate commerce goes. You can't get this product outside of the state. Now you can, but that would be considered illegal. So it has to be grown here. And then if you're going to use anything that's like a cartridge for a vape, or you're going to have an edible, or you're going to use it in any fashion other than the flower itself, it's infused. So it becomes infused or processed product. It's just a processor. We here in the Midwest have so many CPG, consumer product goods, it's really natural to us to be able to have laboratories to learn how to create new products. And there will be a lot of really great innovation and product development as a result. And then you have the retail outlet, which is the dispensary. And then you've got the logistics provider, which also Chicago's a huge hub of logistics provider. We've got amazing. Olive Harvey College just focuses on logistics. We have so much talent here in Chicago and across Illinois in all of these verticals that are not part of the weed business. Now we sort of are layering on weed, and we just have an explosion of opportunity for jobs, for new businesses, for innovation.
What's a logistics provider in the weed business?
Well, Lisa was talking about how you have to have weed that's been kept at a certain temperature so that it doesn't collect mold on it, right? Mm-hmm. So there have to be very specific requirements that, you know, your typical person with a pickup truck who might be transporting it from the grow facility to the dispensary may not have, unless they're meeting certain stipulations. Plus, they've got to have security. They have to have certain specifications that just the regular mom and pop delivery person for Amazon today doesn't have. And so they've got to meet that requirement, and the state has to also license that as well.
So every one of these things is licensed by the state?
Every one of those ones that I just named, those four items, grow, dispense, infuse, and transport, all of those areas have to be licensed. The only ones that you could have applied for until now has been dispensary. The application for the other three just came out 2 days ago, actually. And then besides that, you've got the fifth, which is everything else. That is a lawyer, that is a real estate broker, that is a marketing person, an accountant. If you've got a specialty in this business, and it requires specialization, there's an entire different tax accounting that's required for these businesses. There's entirely different ways that you have to deal with it because you have to be so above board and so transparent and so understanding how the dynamics of a very highly regulated industry works is critical for anybody who wants to venture into this. But we need insurance. We need all sorts of products. You know, when you think about the gold rush, people are calling this the green rush. When you think about the gold rush from, you know, 170 years ago in San Francisco, what brand do you still associate with that?
Levi's.
There you go. Well, they were selling jeans. They don't have any association really with gold, but they were ancillary to that industry. And those are where people are really believing is going to be the big hit. That's where the most innovation is going to come from. That's where the most outstanding brands are going to come from. We just don't even know.
Wow. Damn, if I could figure that out, I'd invest in that company and be a rich man in about 10 years.
Well, you could just invest in all the entrepreneurs who are really going into it.
Okay, with all my millions of dollars I make from the Chicago Reader, I'm going to kick some of that money in. All right, you talk about insurance, you talk about accounting. where do people go to get training to be an insurance or an insurance person or an accountant in the cannabis industry?
So, well, I can speak to like legal. There are certain people that are offering CLEs, the continuing education credits for attorneys, that talk about the industry. There are companies that have CME and CEU programs. Those are credits for medical professionals, so they can understand cannabis and how it works as a medicine. So the accounting I can't speak to, maybe AB can, but this is cropping up. And
it's happening everywhere. But I know that it's happening in insurance also. My home and auto provider was telling me that he's being approached to actually take some continuing education in this. But more specifically about plant touching, for instance, there are a lot of programs that have been created. So first of all, the state created a provision called Responsible Vendor. And that is there are 26 organizations that have been approved to teach how to be an operator in a dispensary right now. And those organizations are the only ones who can do that legally. In the future, I would anticipate they'll have a similar designation for people who can teach how to grow. At Growmentum, we'll be teaching entrepreneurship, and we'll also be teaching all the different aspects of working with the plant for the entrepreneur who wants to understand what their business process is going to be, or really wants to focus on developing a brand, a specific product, maybe a strain or something specific like that. So there are many different organizations. Part of them will be the community colleges that are going to really be the only ones with a designation to teach some of this plant touching attributes. But as Lisa said, the sky is the limit. Mm-hmm. With ancillary, you can learn about things from your profession or from other states or online. I mean, there are so many different ways that you could slice that.
And university programs are cropping up, pun intended, all over the place. So we've got Oakton Community College. Is it Western Michigan University that has like the hemp growing program? So they are seeing this as a way to attract students where a lot of these young people want to go. That's what they want to go into. They're excited about the green rush and they want to be a part of it.
We at Growmentum are on the advisory team for Chicago City Colleges to help them develop their workforce development program as well. I know Chicago State has something.
Lisa, the last time in the show, some people called in with a question. I didn't have the answer, so either one of you can answer it. I would appreciate it. How are the dispensaries dealing with payroll?
It's a great question. So there are certain payroll packages. So let me actually unpack that a little bit. Mm-hmm. For people who don't know, for people who have not been in a dispensary, generally this industry has no banking attributes. You can't walk in there and use your credit card. You can use your debit card, but you can't use a credit card. And that is because credit cards are insured by the FDIC, and the federal government can't be, it's still considered a Schedule
I
drug.
Illegal.
Right. Mm-hmm. Federally, it is illegal. Yeah. So
illegal.
Illegal federally, yes. but legal on the state level. And so as a result, banking is a real problem. Mm-hmm. The Safe Banking Act has made some inroads, but it hasn't gotten far enough.
It's a state of Illinois act.
Well, there's a safe banking from Illinois, but what we really need is safe banking nationally, because the FDIC, the banks that are insured by the FDIC, which is most of the big banks you know of, unless you're a state chartered bank, you're really unable to transact. And so most of the dispensaries, if they bank with a large, you know, bank, it's really difficult. They really can't use credit cards. So as a result, they also have a challenging time paying vendors, paying everyone. And so there are certain workforce products out there that are basically computer programs that they use across different dispensaries in lots of different states to help get their employees paid.
Okay, so in general, that is true. However, there are companies on the West Coast that have overseas incorporations that are able to do these financial transactions cashless. So they're much more popular on the West Coast. The companies in Illinois are very hesitant to get involved with them, but the cash is an issue. And I was talking to a lot of dispensaries ahead of time, asking if they were going to move to these cashless ATMs or these other companies which will actually run credit cards. And they just really weren't ready to go there. And there was a very unfortunate incident on Monday.
Of course.
Where one of the Chicago dispensaries was robbed. I don't know if there was any staff in there at the time. I'm hoping there wasn't. It's been reported in the news. They think there was a key card used to gain entry. So I'm assuming there's an ongoing investigation, which is why not much has been shared. But, you know, there's too big of a risk. So the federal government really needs to take that into account, the safety of everyone in the industry, of all shoppers.
I mean, we're here in Chicago. It's a highly weaponized place.
Well,
and, you know.
Okay, I'm still not understanding this. So let's say I have the Benny J dispensary. And I have Miles works for me and Dennis works for me. And I have to pay them. So
transfer funds to their account. It's like a PayPal for the cannabis industry.
So
these companies exist.
These companies
you could pay your suppliers.
The federal
way.
Government is not putting these companies out of business. Because there was concern about a year ago,
yes,
I want to say 2 years ago, I was interviewing, this was before legal recreational reefer, so I would be medical dispensaries. And I remember this fella came on the show and he was saying, I don't know how I'm going to be able to pay anybody because the feds, this was the day when Jeff Sessions was the attorney general. Mm-hmm. He had this whole thing, Amy, about he was like going to destroy the marijuana industry.
He was reversing what they called the Cole memo.
Yes, very good. You know your stuff.
This is why Amy's the mystery guest.
Very well done. Yes, the Cole memo was just from the Obama days, right, where they're going to look the other way.
Exactly.
You know, it's like don't ask, don't tell in reefer. Well, we're just not going to pay attention to the fact.
He was not that kind of guy.
Sessions was
right.
Not that kind of guy.
Exactly.
So you go, yeah, I'm ripping up that Cole memo, and I'm going to come after them because marijuana is the reason. Cannabis is the reason.
Well, he would have been saying
he would have said marijuana.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Or maybe he would have called a reefer.
But they've walked
back
that
home
back
in Alabama.
They've walked that
oh, they
back.
They walked
since
it back
since then. Yeah, he's no longer there.
Yeah, so, that is true, but so not they, for that reason.
Can I address the marijuana word again? Because there are people that use it as a regular term. They don't feel that there's really any racist part. They feel like that fell by the wayside. It just became a common term. Like if you look into the history of the swastika, thousands of years ago, it was actually this powerful, positive spiritual symbol.
Yeah, but that was
the Nazis
reversed.
Took. So,
but anyway.
Yeah, but so...
Always
it's very questionable.
You have when you do Nazi analogies. I just warn guests about that in general, but
so,
go ahead.
All right, let's erase that if we can. But you'll hear people on both sides of the argument for marijuana. But
right,
in general,
fine.
If you steer clear
cannabis,
of it,
cannabis, reefer,
safe.
Whatever. The point is that...
The green stuff.
The green stuff is that Sessions is no longer attorney general, but it was not for his position on cannabis that Donald Trump got rid of him. Just want to make that clear to all of our listeners out there. It had nothing to do with that. So in other words, okay, so they can meet their payroll. There are ways that they can meet their payroll.
There are ways, yeah.
And they can pay their bills,
yeah,
et cetera, and so forth. So the federal ban on legal marijuana or legal reefer has not really burdened the industry that much.
It has burdened the industry tremendously because it's an awful customer experience.
Yeah.
I mean, to have to use your cash, that's... I mean, really, what we really need to be doing is moving to more of a cashless, just like Lisa was saying, a cashless society where that's just not an issue and you're not walking around with it.
Yeah.
It's also for the people that don't want to think of themselves as using drugs and have a medical cannabis card or truly using it for medication. And when they're forced to go in with a wad of cash and walk out with a bag that's been stapled shut, it's harder for them to accept that, yes, this is medicine and I'm okay. I'm not using illicit drugs. Mm-hmm.
All right, now let's address the issue of what you call social equity. It was really upsetting to a lot of people, myself included, the symbolism. When cannabis became legal on January 1st, the owners of the major dispensaries were white guys. And for years and years and years, as you were pointing out, Amy, the victims of the war on drug were basically black people. And so it just was so symbolically wretched,
yes,
to take a look at when legalization happened once again. You know what I'm saying, Amy?
Yeah, they did a bad job. They had an opportunity, those companies had an opportunity to handle it differently, and they didn't. They should have sent other people. They should have sent all the women or all the people on their staff that are diverse, because they do have diversity among them. Mm-hmm. But it was just a bad photo op. But it's important to understand why and what that was about.
Mm-hmm.
So for starters, the most important thing to the state is that whoever is commercially involved in this product, that they are doing it at a standard, and that that is a high standard, and that they have their operating procedures, everything labeled, you know what you're getting, every single transaction, every single thing is tip-top known. And when the state, it took all these years for the state to get comfortable with those who have been operating this way, to operate on this level, that finally they said, you know what, we trust you. It's a really big deal for the government to decide to trust you to do this right. And they weren't going to at all open up a dispensary or any other access unless they were confident that the people who were delivering it were going to deliver it at that level. So those people, as we know, because that's how it all started, were 96% white men. That's who they were. So the question is they were in a quandary. They were like, well, on one hand, we could delay the implementation and not make it January 1st and wait until we had cultivated and given people all this access, and then the consumer was going to suffer. So the consumer was not going to be allowed to buy it, even though it was legal as of January 1st. So what does that do? What that does is that instigates or perpetuates the illicit market to continue to operate. And they wanted to be able to create some sort of a customer supply. So they were stuck in this situation. And I'm still not saying that it was the best situation. And I do think that what should have happened is that they should have incentivized certain behaviors of those companies, not just for the photo op that day that you're referring to, but more importantly, they could have required them to put employee ownership in place. They could have required them to hire 60% from disproportionately impacted area, just like the stipulation will be later on May 1st, the announcement of the new companies are that have been accepted. You know, it's the same stipulations. Why not require them or incentivize and say, look, you companies, we will relax our taxes on you if you put these things, or we will give you opportunities to develop in areas that you wouldn't have had opportunities, or we will help fund certain operations, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. They could have incentivized those behaviors, and they didn't. And to me, that was a miss. That was a miss on behalf of social equity. That was a miss for everyone, really.
And so when did you say the next licenses go out? What date did you say?
So the next wave of dispensary applicants, they just had to submit their applications on January 2nd, uh-huh. and we will find out who wins on May 1st.
May 1st.
And there were the day, 700 applicants.
Wow.
That represents 4,000 dispensaries, and of them, 600 of those 700 had a social equity ownership component to it. So that's about 87-88%. I don't know. I don't do math that quickly, but that has social equity. So it sounds to me like everybody heard the message loud and clear.
So if there's somebody listening out there who spent time in jail for getting busted with reefer, or has a gap on his or her resume because of time in jail for reefer, even if he hasn't been in jail but wants to take advantage of the legalization of cannabis, how can your group help them?
Well, first of all, if they are interested in applying for one of these licenses, or if they're interested in maybe starting a company that is ancillary in nature, they can apply. Well, first of all, they can come to us regardless if they really were in that situation. We are doing a lot of advising and helping them get their applications completed. We've had a ton of, we did this last quarter with a ton of different programs and one-on-one coaching. We brought experts who are from the other part of town, who have this expertise both in cannabis and in very functional areas, that really came and helped them understand how to get that section of their application done, and then also reviewed applications for them. That's what we're doing before the licenses applications are available. We are also very interested, if there are people who are interested in investing in social equity companies, we are matching to the social equity applicants, because there are some incredible business ideas out there, incredible people who have amazing experience that just haven't had the opportunity. So we're doing that as well. And then finally, once our accelerator program begins, after those first applications have been accepted, apply for the accelerator, and we're going to help you launch your business quickly and with the means that you need.
What do you think the potential for growth here is, Lisa?
Growth in the industry in general, or
in terms of social equity aspect.
I think it's great. I think a lot of people are hearing what they need to hear, and then we have wonderful organizations like Gromentum Lab that are supporting people, and there are other law firms that are working with people that have them focused on social justice and social equity. Don't know if they're doing any pro bono work. We can look into that. We can get some attorneys on, but yeah, I think we're moving in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Amy, folks want to get in touch with you. Tell folks how to get into Gromentum Labs.
GromentumLab.com. There's no W in that. GROMENTUM Lab. One. Nope. That's singular, not plural.
Got it. All right, very good. Amy Nathan, Lisa Solomon, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it. And also want to thank Ed Maher.
And hey, we got a thanks to the YouTube live stream chat and our good friend Stephen. We have a name for this segment now. We didn't know what to call it, really. I think I called it, a guide to getting high? But thanks to our good friend Stephen.
Dr. Doobie.
We're having fun going back and forth with that on the live stream chat.
Dr. Doobie.
Not a doctor, and that's kind of cool sounding. But the name we're giving this segment, thanks to Stephen, we got to give him a shout out. Now, we often do the deep dive here on the Ben Jarofsky Show, but people, get ready for Lisa Solomon and the dope dive.
That's correct. That's very good.
Thanks, Stephen.
And I think of that, man.
Yeah, well.
I just go reefer expert, but I like that dope dive. All right, another episode of the dope dive with Lisa Solomon and Amy Nathan. And that's G-R-O-M as in Mary, E-N as in Nancy, T-U-M as in Mary, L-A-B. Correct. How about that?
Huh? Awesome.
That's got to spell it out for people.
All right, and I'm posting some things on a Facebook page, like the movies I'm recommending. I just set it up, Lisa the Hemp Guru. Find me on Facebook. And this way, when people
can't
write it to
him. Did we talk about stoner movies last night?
You said movies.
The informational ones. Oh, the people in grass and things like that.
I was talking stoner movies. Yeah. My favorite. Big Lebowski is still the best stoner movie of all time. All right, Lisa Solomon, Amy Nathan. Also want to thank Ed Maher and Miles Confl. Lassen earlier in the day. Miles Porter was back from vacation, and good to have him back. And of course, the man, the myth, the legend. And as Lisa Solomon and Amy Nathan can tell you, back home in Alton, Illinois, they call him White Lightning. Give yourself a raise, Dr. D, and take it out of petty cash. See you tomorrow, everybody.
Just Dennis. All right. And remember, you can download previous Ben Jarofsky shows and Vinny J bonus interviews at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites and wherever else you download your favorite podcast. Downloaders, we love it when you download. We think it's great. But did you know that we live stream this program? It's true. Tuesdays through Fridays, 1 until 3 p.m. Central Time at both Chicago Sun-Times and Chicago Reader websites, the Chicago Sun-Times YouTube channel. So if you're ever downloading and you wonder, I wonder what those guys look like, go over to the YouTube channel and be unimpressed. We'll see you tomorrow.
That's correct.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.